Okay, so I wanted to start by congratulating you on Democratic victory in November, controlling the Senate, the State House by 102 to 101, thanks to Barbara Smith's majority over Shannon Royer, the former majority caucus chair, by 23-vote margin. To what do you account your success?
I think the people of Pennsylvania were ready for a change. The Republican leadership over the past dozen years have been more about avoiding serious issues and about dealing with them, and coupled with the disastrous effects of the Bush administration nationally, people wanted change in Pennsylvania politics, mm-hmm. and got it.
So with all the consensus for change and with the federal elections faring so well and Rendell crushing Swan, how come why do you think the state Senate stayed firmly in Republican hands this election?
I think there was a lack of a vigorous campaigning in the state Senate. There's been much less of a team spirit in the state Senate than the state House. Mm-hmm. Democratic state senators tend to hoard the money they raise. And House members tend to give it to candidates mm-hmm. who need help.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as caucus chairman, how do you view the chance of the Democratic Party hanging on to their majority over the next few years?
I think that depends on to what degree we're able to deal with public concerns and show that we can really make a difference in people's lives. I think that we're certainly going to work to improve social services in Pennsylvania. Dennis O'Brien, our new speaker, is one of Pennsylvania's premier social service advocates. We certainly want to put into effect property tax relief for low and moderate income senior citizens to a greater degree than it's in effect now. We passed legislation to do that. In the last session, but it has not yet been implemented, and there's always a certain amount of skepticism when we pass legislation. Well, how do we know it's actually going to be implemented? So we will see that it is implemented. We will preside over the expansion of legalized gambling in Pennsylvania, and hopefully we will regulate it in an intelligent way so the money goes for worthwhile public purposes and it does not create many bad side effects. I would hope that we would work to improve the public school system in Philadelphia and the public school systems elsewhere. I would hope that we would either be able to make the state takeovers of Philadelphia and distressed districts around the state either work better or revert those takeovers to local control.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the legalized gambling, Pennsylvania has proposing one of the highest tax rates in the country. What do you think is going to happen with the Gaming Commission's 5% surcharge that they're proposing now?
I'm not really sure. The high tax rate is coupled with a very low rate that they had to pay for the state to become established here. Mm-hmm. Casinos had to pay $50 million to be established. In other states, it's been as high as $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, on the whole, they're not being treated unjustly.
Right. You're known on the web as a regular diarist on Daily Cause.
Yes.
And widely appreciated for your insights to state government. How did you get involved in this? And do you see other politicians perhaps following in your footsteps?
I believe it makes a lot of sense to blog. It makes you more conscious of the significance of the things you do day to day. It gives you a way to reach out to people on matters that are not of earth-shaking significance, but nevertheless are interesting and help boost their understanding. I think it's a very good way to reach out. There are limited the ways we have of reaching out now are limited. To a certain degree, when we quote unquote make news, we get coverage. However, it's become more and more difficult to make news as the total amount of news coverage has gone down over time. Radio stations, television stations, newspaper stations are more and more conscious that their duty ultimately is to sell the greatest possible number of advertising, and covering political news is not necessarily the best way to do that. So there's less and less space for news, and a very high percentage of that space is dealt with what crimes were committed last night.
Mm-hmm. And when people follow the political news, often it's at a national level. Many
correct.
People are even unaware the Democrats are in control of the House.
That's correct. And I think there's a way to, and I think the internet, by letting people choose the subjects they want to talk about, is a way to get around the limits on what counts as news. And it enables you to talk about things that are interesting, that are important, even if they're not new, mm-hmm. and even if they don't foretell dramatic changes, just explaining the way the system operates, even if hasn't changed dramatically, is I think a useful public service.
Now, many perceive the Pennsylvania government as opaque. Floor debates are published often 6 months after they transpire, and committee hearing transcripts can be sometimes very difficult to obtain. And as a result, you know, Republican can try to kill something in committee, and then on the floor pretend that they're in favor of it. Do you think that the Sunshine Plan described recently in the Pittsburgh Tribune or any other changes might have any chance of seeing the light of day?
Yeah, well, right now we've started posting debates on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
All debates are public on this, in the sense that the Pennsylvania Cable Network covers legislative proceedings live, and then they run them over again after they occur. So there is plenty of opportunity for the public to know what's going on. Obviously, there's no end to the things that could be done to increase public accessibility of it. You know, we could mail in an ideal world, perhaps with unlimited interest and unlimited resources, we could mail tapes of every day's debate to every voter.
Yeah.
You know, within 24 hours after the tapes are made. But you know, in a world of limited resources, we are, I think, making significant steps ahead. When I was first elected to the legislature, of course, there was no internet to post debates on. And we did not have any television coverage at all of the legislative proceedings.
So can you tell our readers in the Philadelphia Jewish community about your involvement in the community?
Well, I'm on the board of the Jewish National Fund. I formerly served on the board of the American Jewish Committee. I'm a member of Shirei Shemayim Synagogue, where my daughter Amanda was bat mitzvahed last year. She's a student and is right now at Gratz College Community High School. My family is very supportive of the Jewish community. My brother Dennis, who's now on the Philadelphia Common Pleas Court, was co-chairman of the Israeli Day Parade for a good number of years.
Now, obviously, foreign policy is a matter best addressed by the federal government. However, Bob Casey, as state treasurer, recently increased state holdings of Israel bonds to a total of $50 million. Are there any other ways that you feel Pennsylvania can show its support for Israel?
I think Casey acted under the authority granted him by the legislature to buy those bonds.
Yeah.
And I was a co-sponsor of that legislation. Pennsylvania has a continuing trade relationship with Israel, along with other countries. The Commerce Department has a deputy, Joe Hoffel, a former member of Congress, who is in charge with the increasing trade with foreign countries, and the United States has offices across the world. Certainly, that apparatus probably can be used more vigorously to increase trade with Israel and have worthwhile exchanges with Israel.
Yeah. Now, I believe you were chairman of the House Labor Relations Committee?
That's right. I served as chairman of the Labor Relations Committee from 1983 through January of 1990.
So can you comment on the recent changes in the Pennsylvania minimum wage and on the bill working its way through Congress to change the national minimum wage?
I was the initiator of the effort in the House to raise the minimum wage to $7.15. I was the initiator of the effort to get the Pennsylvania legislature into the business of raising the minimum wage above the federal level 20 years ago. In 1988, for the first time in history, Pennsylvania raised the minimum wage above the federal level. I think that the federal legislation, at least as far as Pennsylvania is concerned, is virtually meaningless, and it's going to be meaningless for more and more states as time goes on. Pennsylvania's wage is now just going to be 10 cents lower than the federal wage, which isn't going to fully take effect until 2009. Pennsylvania's wage goes up to $7.15 July 1st, 2007, and the federal minimum wage at the earliest won't take effect until January 1st, 2009. I've written on the Daily Kos that Congress really ought to be seeking a much higher minimum wage. 70% of the country is now covered by higher minimum wage than the federal minimum, and I have introduced legislation in Pennsylvania to raise the minimum wage to $9.35 an hour as of 2010, raise it to $8.15 an hour in 2008, $8.75 an hour in 2009, $9.35 in 2010, and then adjust it to as a cost of living adjustment. Thereafter, assuming inflation stays under 4% a year in 2007, 2008, and 2009, the 9.35 figure will barely lift a full-time minimum wage worker out of poverty. That is something that was traditionally done in the 1960s. It's time for us to go back to the idea that a full-time minimum wage worker supporting two dependents ought not to be in poverty.
The national raise in the minimum wage was part of Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic leadership's touted 100-hour agenda. Does the governor and the Democratic leadership in Harrisburg have a similar timetable? What's our agenda, and what do we hope to accomplish in the next 2 years while the Republicans continue to control the Senate?
We hope to improve environmental protections. We hope to raise the minimum wage again. We hope to improve funding for social services. We hope to deliver senior citizens property tax relief. We hope to increase consumer rights. We hope to increase the rights of people to join labor unions and some more rights in the workplace.
And will it be difficult to move this agenda when already we lack the working majority necessary to elect Bill DeWeese as Speaker?
Obviously, there are problems. Our margin in the State House of Representatives is considerably less than the margin of the Democrats in Congress, which is another reason why it is frustrating to me that they are seeking what I see as essentially meaningless minimum wage legislation. I believe that we will make every effort, that we were able to get meaningful legislation through in the last session when the Republicans were in the majority by reaching out to the public, by clearly articulating what we stand for, by mobilizing large numbers of people, and I think we will have to use the same tactics this time. The fact that we have 102 seats in the State House all by itself, if there is no mobilization for the things in which we believe, will not be enough to push our agenda through.
Now, why did State Representative Caltagirone. A couple of other Democrats vote for John Purcell to remain as Speaker?
Purcell is good at delivering targeted benefits to people and districts. If you have a project in your district that needs a grant, John Purcell is good at finding a way to see that you get the grant. However, in the overall picture, you know, these grants are a tiny, tiny percentage of the state budget, and it really makes a difference as to how much money is available for education, how much money is available for mental health, mental retardation, what the overall priorities are. And there's no question that the Democratic overall priorities are far more in the interest of those three heavily minority districts than Republican priorities are.
Will there be any consequence to these Democrats for defecting?
I think they have not strengthened their chances of winning re-election in 2008. How much they've hurt their chances remains to be seen.
And do you think it's likely that they might flip and return control to the Republicans?
Anything is possible, but none of them have districts that could possibly elect a Republican unless they hire every voter in the district to work at the polls for them. They all have overwhelmingly Democratic districts that have probably not gone for a Republican candidate for president in anybody's lifetime.
And how has O'Brien worked out so far as a Republican Speaker running a Democratic House?
So far it's worked out fine. He's appointed all the Democratic committee chairmen recommended by the majority leader. He's established a committee on reforms, appointed by co-chaired by Representative Joshua Shapiro of Abington, who helped initiate his candidacy for Speaker, and David Stile, a Republican who supported his election as Speaker. I think the desire for reform was always a key impetus, both in the election of Democrats and in the defection of Republicans for O'Brien's candidacy. And I think we're going to try to deal with that in a constructive manner.
How do you view O'Brien's voting record on the specific issues that you've been mentioning, the environment and the labor rights and so on?
On labor, he has a pretty good record. On the environment, it's probably better than the average Republican. I think that though as the Speaker, essentially representing a Democratic majority, his voting record will be much more in accord with the Democratic Party than it's been in previous elections. that's been in previous sessions.
Now, Ceasefire PA has proposed an anti-handgun trafficking bill targeting the straw purchasers by limiting most people to one handgun per month. As Judiciary Chair, O'Brien prevented this bill from being heard in committee. Do you see any hope that this bill will go to the floor or at least be heard in committee this
time around? Well, it went to the floor in a non-binding fashion. The Republican leader, Sam Smith, is a great believer in trying to break deadlocks by taking polls of all members by secret ballot first when there's a lot of controversy. And so we had a committee of the whole that voted on this by secret ballot, and it got creamed last session. Well, there are many new members in this session, and because of Smith's secret ballot method, nobody's on record. It also, people can be free to change their vote. But this is a prime example of something that requires a lot of public mobilization.
Right.
If there is no public, if only the NRA believes the First Amendment applies to them, we will never in anybody's lifetime pass regulations of guns. People who believe that the government ought to regulate guns have to contact their legislators and have to be willing to actively support candidates who agree with those beliefs.
Okay, that's still flashing. But if the people don't have to go on the record with a public vote, then the voters have trouble holding them accountable.
Well, they have to go. If anything is to happen, they have to go on record with a public vote. This was a mechanism to this. The secret vote was a mechanism to determine what support there was for it. And among the people in the legislature in September of 2006, there was nowhere near enough public support for it to pass. So that has been established. Now, there are 50 new members of the House who are not there then, and there is a tremendous need for public mobilization. If people who favor gun control just talk about it to themselves, it will never happen in the lifetime of a single Pennsylvanian.
You know, many states have an automatic calendar requiring things to actually be brought up to a vote if they have some minimal level of signatures. Is there any chance of that happening?
In Pennsylvania, here? With the current level of mobilization in which right-wingers feel the First Amendment applies to them and they have every right to contact the legislature, and people who are centrists and liberals feel they could only contact the legislature under extraordinary circumstances, which have to be carefully choreographed with elaborate preparation and extensive organizational skill, all that will do is enable the passage of a right-wing agenda. There has to be a far, far greater involvement of progressive Pennsylvanians in the legislative process for that to have any positive meaning.
Now, to change the subject, because of the creative redistricting and gerrymandering, it's been said that voters no longer choose politicians, that politicians choose their voters. In the recent midterm election, Iowa had the most competitive races because of their rules imposing a nonpartisan redistricting process.
Well, in Iowa, the Democrats gained 2 seats out of 7.
Mm-hmm.
And in Pennsylvania, the Democrats gained 4 seats out of 19. There was not a tremendous difference.
But all 7 seats were very close.
The Democratic
in Iowa. There were no seats in which the candidate basically could stop campaigning and give their money to weaker candidates.
In Pennsylvania, the only seats that were not close among the areas I've studied, at least, were the two majority minority districts. If we're going to say that competitiveness is the key thing, and we're going to have to eliminate majority minority districts and dramatically reduce the number of minorities in the U.S. Congress and other legislative bodies. I think that has certain perils to it, and I would not be in support of doing that. I do not believe it is a good idea to blindly draw district lines I think it is very, very difficult in Philadelphia, outside of Northeast Philadelphia, to come up with any competitive legislative districts. The city is overwhelmingly Democratic. It's overwhelmingly Democratic largely because of demographic reasons. Similarly, many areas of Pennsylvania are overwhelmingly Democratic, overwhelmingly Republican, rather, because of demographic reasons. It is very, very hard anywhere in this district to draw a Democratic majority in communities that are heavily of German and English ancestry, for instance. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very hard and probably impossible to draw Democratic majorities in communities that are overwhelmingly African American. It's impossible to draw Republican districts.
Mm-hmm.
In districts that are overwhelmingly African American. I think ethnicity, income levels, educational levels have far, far more to do with how people vote than the district lines are. And I think this is this is a solution in search of a problem. I really do not believe that it is in. This is a form of term limits, basically, which I think is less preferable than actual term limits. If people want to get rid of incumbent legislators, they ought to come right out and say, I want to get rid of all incumbent legislators after X number of years. That is less objectionable to me, although I do not support it,
mm-hmm.
than saying, well, I favor letting a bunch of people who know nothing about politics arbitrarily decide whose districts we're going to get rid of every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think such a proposal is full of potential for abuse. I do not believe it is in the long run interest of progressives to empower people to willy nilly get rid of progressive legislators. If it is not abused in Iowa, it certainly can be abused. And I strenuously oppose it. I think it is seriously against the interests of representative government to allow people who are unelected, unaccountable to anybody, decide arbitrarily that they are going to put two, three, or more legislators in the same district and force one, two, or three of them to leave office.
Okay. The Republicans used walking around money, WHAM, to enforce party loyalty. Do you anticipate the Democratic leadership continuing this practice?
I believe that we will try to encourage people to vote with the Democratic Party as best as we can, but I think we want to avoid high-handed, arbitrary tactics.
Governor Rendell appointed former State Rep Conte to a newly created position in charge of the Liquor Control Board.
Yeah.
Newman had been seen by many as doing a great job in making the Pennsylvania liquor stores profitable. As a state representative, how do you feel about Conte from your experience working with him? And do you view his appointment into the newly created position as a reward for supporting a governor?
I assume it is a reward for supporting the governor. I have no idea how good a job Conte will do. I do have questions about Newman's goal of trying to make the liquor stores as profitable as possible. The whole reason they are under state control is to stop people from becoming addicted to alcohol. Alcohol addiction is a major problem in this country, and Pennsylvania, by many measures, has been near the bottom of the states and the amount of alcohol addictions. We're near the bottom in people arrested or convicted of drunk driving. We're in the bottom of people getting treatment for alcohol addiction or on waiting lists to get treatment for addiction. So I think although many people have objections to the state being in this business, it has had a positive effect on reducing alcohol addiction. When we say, why not, since we're in this business, our goal is to increase sales to the greatest possible degree, I think we're undermining the original reason why we got in this business in the first place.
Right. Other than New Hampshire, Pennsylvania has the largest state house in the country with 203 members, Georgia coming next with 180. Do you think Pennsylvania is better or worse served by such a large state house?
I think it's better served because you have all sorts of interests being represented in the state house. State house district has no more than 62,000 people at the current time. It will have more in the next census because the population of Pennsylvania is growing. The 62,000 is, mm-hmm. is based on the 2000 census. It is possible to win election to the state legislature without spending a lot of money. In 1974 dollars, I spent about $4,500 to get elected to the state legislature. So you can multiply that by about five now, but even in 2006, people got elected. I had lunch with a Republican legislator who spent $11,000 to get elected for the first term. If a seat is not heavily contested by the major parties, it's possible to get elected with without a lot of expenditures, and it's possible to have a relationship with the people in the district. I on election day, I could get around my district, which is now about 7-8 square miles, and visit every polling place or almost every polling place, and talk to hundreds of voters in the course of the day, and I get a pretty good sense of what people are thinking. The larger the district becomes, the lower and lower the percentage of voters that I can have personal contact with, and more voter contact becomes just delegated to others. I believe that smaller districts help build a democracy. I note that in all counties except Philadelphia, the counties are divided into townships and boroughs, and all decisions just aren't made at a county level. People like the idea of a small government where they can actually get to know the legislators.
Okay. With the Republicans having a majority on the Supreme Court, what do you think would be the effect on Pennsylvania if Roe versus Wade was overturned?
Well, a bill would have to get through the legislature to outlaw abortion. I think there would be an effort made in Pennsylvania to do that. Again, the question of who contacts the legislature is of vital importance. I think it is clear from Governor Rendell's two victories, from Governor Ridge's two victories, the defeat of Rick Santorum, from the repeated victories in Pennsylvania of Bill Clinton, Al Gore, and John Kerry, that the voters in Pennsylvania as a whole are pro-choice. Numerous polls have shown that as well. Again, the question is who contacts the legislature? And traditionally, the people who are against abortion have shown no reluctance to contact legislators, while people who are pro-choice have tended to view this as a matter of great complications and great strategy and have not done so in the same percentages. I would really hope that people would realize this is not a very complicated thing at all. You have a legislator. He's the guy who sends you a lot of mail. call him up or her up. Let them know where you stand on the issue. You don't need a whole organization behind you. You don't need a great strategy. Just contact the people. And if the pro-choice majority asserts itself, we should be able to beat back attempts to outlaw abortion in Pennsylvania if indeed Roe versus Wade is repealed. If the pro-choice majority gets mired in complexity, we will not be able to beat it back. So Rendell will veto it as long as he is governor. So it would take a two-thirds vote in the legislature to override Rendell's veto. That depends on how much mobilization there is as to whether it can be done. But I have no doubt that if people who are pro-choice contact their legislators, Roe versus Wade's repeal will not be determinative in Pennsylvania.
What about same-sex marriage and similar arrangements? Is that likely to become an issue in Pennsylvania?
Well, it has been an issue in Pennsylvania, and because the gay community has, to a considerable degree, engaged itself at the state legislative level, the effect has been that Pennsylvania has not taken action to pass a constitutional amendment outlawing same-sex marriage, and that is due to the mobilization of the gay community. The legislature, if anything, is hyper-responsive to communities that make themselves known and make their wishes known. It tends to ignore communities that, for any reason whatsoever, do not feel it imperative to be in touch with the legislature. And I think the gay community and the state store workers are two examples of communities that have been very, very active and have therefore influenced public policy in a manner that the right wing in Pennsylvania strongly opposes. And my hope is that these examples would spur others to act in a similar way of vigorous outreach and vigorous political action in regards to the legislature.
Well, thank you. Do you have any final remarks you want to add before we close?
I appreciate this interview. I read the Jewish Voice from time to time. It's an outstanding publication, and I think it's an example of how you can start something on the internet without a lot of money, and I hope it's a very successful enterprise, and eventually it gets into print.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and good luck to you in your new role as with the
majority
leader. Caucus chairman. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Let's see if we can stop this. Let's see.